Blog Talk Radio.
The relationship between yin and yang produces a circular evolution in which every end is the beginning. Tai Gong Diao. Wise smile at both premature death and excessive old age. They smile and wish you to smile as well. Changing fortunes of life, for they know all individual beings. this Wednesday. I want to start right off by reminding everyone that Main Street Universe is a network of 5 shows. 7 p.m. Eastern Time is the flagship show, Main Street Universe, with myself, hostess Janice, as well as Brett Hillman, who is back joining us again. I'd like to remind you that Fridays at midnight is Activating Compassion in the Midnight Hour with Jesse Ann and Nicholas George. That's Friday at midnight. She's the author of 2 books, Activating Compassion and Activating Compassion, the Companion Workbook, and is working on 2 more. That's midnight on Friday. Then, of course, on Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time is Darren Bouquer, who's a reader at Marie Laveau's House of Voodoo in the magical city of New Orleans. 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Darren Bouquer. He does tarot palmistry, talks to spirit guides, does all sorts of work and cleansing work and all sorts of other things. 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Transcendence is the name of the show. Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern is Walking on the Sidewalk with Kevin Baird, A Horizon Oracle's Journey. Kevin's the creator of the Horizon Oracle. We reached at www.templeofgaia.com. So that's 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday. On Tuesdays, I think back in the evening time again, 10:30 p.m., is Inner Wisdom with your hostess, Mary Phelan. Mary has been on television for 14 years with her show Telepathic TV. So be sure to catch her at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Inner Wisdom with Mary Phelan. She's done a lot of work in the metaphysical community here in Northern Virginia, and as well as other things. Be sure to check that out. We're now a network of 5 shows here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network. And I'm going to go ahead and bring on our host, Mr. Brett. Hillman, are you there, Brett? No symbol.
I am here. Did you just... That's not going to go away, is it?
What?
Did you just say the Velvet Lion?
No, I didn't.
Oh, so I heard it of my own free will.
You did it. You just heard that. I did not say it.
Oh, no. It's starting to get into my brain.
I might have said... I haven't said it in 2 weeks or so now, or however long it's been.
Oh, so that's all me then.
Mm-hmm. I could have said words that maybe sounded similar, perhaps, but not that.
Well, we'll hear the archive, and we'll both know I'm crazy, which everyone knew to begin with, so...
And I guess what I'd like to do is to start off with, is Janice going to join us this evening because her mother had recently passed away. And for a moment, her mother was definitely Christian, and I thought just for a moment we would do a brief moment of silence. I'll turn both our microphones off. Everybody have Janice in your thoughts and prayers for just a moment, starting. Okay, and we're back. So that Janice will be taking care of family business and probably be back in about 2 or 3 weeks. It will be Brett and I. And our guest, originally scheduled, Orion Foxwood, had been rescheduled since it was a friend of Janice's, so we decided just to reschedule that guest so she could have a chance to interview him herself, you know. So our thoughts and prayers go to Janice and to her family. And they say it's a very strange and sort of lonely or being left here feeling when a parent dies. I've not experienced this myself, personally.
Nor have I, so.
I imagine it must have that feeling. That's how one person once said it to me. I think when their father died and they had said, it really feels like you're on your own, you know. Because your parents, you know, they took care of you for so long or even helped out in a dawn. It's kind of really that feeling like, oh gosh, it's just, if it was in this person's case, it was an only child, so, you know, that feeling of, it's really just me now, you know. So I imagine it's very, emptiness there.
I'm sure it's true no matter what kind of parent, even close or far. I mean, the fact is, they're the reason you're here.
Mm-hmm.
So, the fact that they're gone can't be an easy thing to deal with.
And honestly, your mom, I mean, one of those situations where who else conditionally loves you like your mom? You just totally needed her from the very beginning, you know, and just it's really got to feel like a huge gap when you lose your mother. And Janice did recently, surprisingly, she passed on a few days ago. So again, thoughts and prayers to Janice as she's dealing with this family issue right now. She'll be back in a couple weeks after she takes care of all this. And for people that want to buy flowers, I believe the name of the funeral home is Hooper's. And I'll actually look that up right now. I'm scrolling down. Here it is. It's Hooper's Funeral Home. For anyone that wants to buy flowers for Janice and her family, and I'll actually give you that number. It's in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and the number is 717-651-1000. 717-651-1000. I see somebody's joined us in the chat room, and then they left. Oh. G2012. I've seen that name in there before. So, yeah, that's Hooper's Funeral Home. That's me. If anybody wants to, if they hear this now or in the archives, future, 717-651-1000. So again, our condolences and sympathy to Janice and her family for their loss. That's a experience, losing all sorts of, you know, friends and different things, and but never a parent and family members as well, but never a parent.
Mostly when it was seemingly son. I don't know if she was prepared for it or not, or
she had some sickness, and she lived a, mm-hmm, you know, long life. I'm thinking she was, I don't want to say guess her age here, but as far as it coming on like this, I think it was a bit of a surprise. I think she had recovered well, and then all of a sudden, like, oh, just one day somebody gets a call, you know. She had died sort of suddenly.
Yeah.
And I'll get more details when she comes back. I haven't talked to her personally. She said she's only taking family calls now. They're taking care of all kinds of family business. You know, those things can be
that
big family and stuff like that, you know.
That needs to be done. So
yeah. So we'll get
Janice will be in our prayers, so.
Yes. And today's topic is about human potential and all different aspects, whether it be the human as a conduit for miracles, whether it's just the abilities within the person, or whether it's just how people can be to one another, good and bad. Which reminds me of, just because some of the research I was doing recently for other things, it ties in a little bit, that how a catastrophe can bring out the best or worst in people. And pretty amazing how that can happen. One time I did a book review here on Main Street Universe of One Dead in the Attic. It was a book written by a reporter who stayed in New Orleans during the Katrina incident. And, you know, you had your looting and you had your assaults and you had your, you know, intimidation and paranoia. Then you also had incredible, you know, simple acts of human kindness that would occur just from, you know, one person or one group to the next. that would just, he said, would just surprise him around every corner.
Well, I think we have a lot of real showings of that in the last few months. I mean, we had the Boston shootings not too long ago, and the ongoing story there, and this major earthquake just last week. Tornado, earthquake.
You're right.
But in Oklahoma. And, I mean, that was a 2 miles wide. And I think we saw some of the best and some of the worst people in, you know, footage from there in the last couple of days and weeks.
It's an interesting phenomenon. And there was actually a study done about how, on one hand, people will tend to copycat a little bit. So it's like if somebody starts a pattern of good behavior, it can become contagious. And I imagine the bad can be in the same way if the people are inclined in that direction. It was an actual study done, and he had kind of a, his name was James Fowler, and it was called a generosity experiment. And that when other humans would see people giving and being charitable and acting in a way that was, you know, sacrificial and all of this, that the people around them, any of them, would tend to, according to this study, would have a natural inclination, which is a human inclination, to mimic it. So was it just the mimic thing going on? You know, it was a very interesting thing about, you know how in, 'cause this guy's a social scientist, political social scientist type, so he studies human behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, you know, there's that willing, the wantingness to fit in. So if like somebody starts it off on the right track, a whole bunch of other people start snowballing in the right direction. So who knows, is it just for their wanting to fit in? I mean, I think it's more than that. I mean, sometimes these studies can sound a little cold like that. But I just thought that was a very interesting experiment. And somebody can look it up if they want online at some point. James Fowler and the generosity experiment. There's some sites. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think a lot of them do. When it becomes just a matter of, are we creatures of neuroscience and nothing more, a lot of those studies do tend to get kind of cold.
Right. But sometimes we are part animal, so it's in part social animal and all that kind of thing. So it's still good to keep those perspectives. They have a purpose and a value, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
And because, you know, I'm definitely on the spiritual side as well. But this experiment he did, he had people, you know, as I said before, giving and being charitable, all this stuff. And those around them would mimic the behavior. So humans will, for whatever reason, you could say it's selfish or not, or they'll mimic good behavior if it's presented to them. And especially if it's presented to them in that social animal context of, oh, well, this is the right thing to do, right? So then it makes them feeling like they're fitting in. The same thing can happen with bad behavior, like gangs and anything else. It's a feeling of family, a feeling like you belong. I was talking to my foreman I work with, is from Jamaica, and he was talking about gangs today in some of the impoverished neighborhoods. And, you know, some of these gangs are families to these guys, you know, and their brutality can be justified by, they can say, oh, well, they took care of me. And so when someone's not in the experience and they don't understand that social dynamic, they don't really know. You know?
Right. And
I'm not trying to drift too far off talking about gangs, but I'm just saying about how humans can also do the right thing if they think it's the social norm of that little circumstance, such as Katrina is a great example. You know, a lot of bad behavior, a lot of really amazingly good and kind behavior as well. And in that book, it was called One Dead in the Attic. I think you remember I did a little book review of it on Main Street Universal one night.
I think that was just before I left.
Yeah, I think it was.
And that would have been like within the last couple of weeks I was there.
I see we've been joined by a magical hummingbird. Welcome, hummingbird. He's in the chat room. And you other folks.
Always good to have our visitors.
Oh, absolutely. Hummingbird's been with us for just about from the beginning. She's been back and forth with us.
See, living hello to you as well. California living, I guess it would be.
Yeah. And tonight we're talking about a few different things. We sort of had an emergency show, so for those of you that don't know, and I know Hummingbird, you know Janice, because you're both in the Fellowship of Isis. Janice's mother passed away, so Janice isn't here this evening to go take care of family business, for her mother had moved on, passed on.
So we are kind of just having a little show this week.
Yeah, discussing human potential, miracles, as well as just human, physically, like some of the things we're talking about, just our basic aspects as sort of social animal and other things. And let me go to this next story that I thought was awesome, and I actually got this from TED Radio on NPR. It's a great story. Professor Sugata Mitra, he's a professor in India, and he placed a computer in a hole in a wall in an urban slum in India. Now, to give you a little bit of background, this professor had sort of been in the fortunate position to teach the students of wealthy people. He made a nice living as a professor, and he thought, what about the potential of the poor children that don't have any access to any of this stuff? And so what he did is he took a computer that was hooked up, it was linked up to a system, it was online, and he hooked this computer up into these, I think it was about 18 different very impoverished slum villages in India, into little holes in the wall, sort of mounted them. Some of them didn't even have keyboards. Let them sit there for months and months and months. Some of the kids learned to play games, and he could monitor this. He could see, like, if they were interacting with it. No one's teaching them how to use these things. These kids maybe had never seen one. Or if they've seen one, they certainly didn't have access to one. So then what happened was one day he gets a message, and he was just like, you know, he wasn't expecting this experiment to be as successful as it was. And one day he gets a message, and he was like, oh my God, they figured out how to send me a message. And these were like little kids. And get this. This is a really amazing part of the story. All of the workings within using and learning this computer were in English. And these children, you know, they're from India, and they speak many of the different Hindi dialects, depending on the region. Eventually, he started contacting the kids again and met up with them. And he goes, how did you guys figure this out? And one of the children said in an irritated voice, they go, well, first we had to teach ourselves English first. So they taught themselves functional English enough to learn how to use a device they had never learned before, all by sharing with one another. And I see Cal Living has just sent a welcome. They said it's their first time here. And I just thought that was such an amazing story that children had no access to any of this. He puts it out there, no instructions, no nothing. It's in a language totally foreign to them. They start teaching themselves the language. And this was about not just the individual, but how groups, when focused and dedicated, can sort of get together, share information, and sort of find ways when necessary to figure things out. So it's like almost as if they're saying, not having a systematic form of education, and I'm not being all, you know, anarchist about this, folks, I'm just saying, there is a point where sometimes those things can get in the way. Now, of course, I'm all for good teachers and all for all that, so I'm not taking it to that extreme. But there is a point, especially I think with youth, where there's that spontaneous, great learning potential that can happen, like when a young person learns a language. how they absorb language so quickly. And in this case, these children taught themselves English to learn a device they never knew how to use. They figured all this stuff out, sent the guy a message. And what was kind of funny is they sent him a message saying that they wanted a better processor and a better mouse. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
So they learned English just to say we want more stuff. I don't know if this ended up being a better in the end of the story.
It is. It is really interesting when put to, you know, the test, how people will rise to the occasion. Even folks that, you know, by what they in Western standards would say, oh, they don't have anything. Well, they definitely have very sharp, you know, wills and sharp minds to be able to absorb, and they sort of taught each other, and they would all just, oh, I've got this and I've got that. And I've learned in some things in environments like that, and it is very productive if you can learn from your peers. You know, learning from your peers can be very valuable, like in school or on the job, when you don't always have to ask the instructor.
Well, I think we've gotten lazy here. I mean, they need sharp minds to, you know, in some cases, to survive.
Right, exactly. So that your senses are on.
And we kind of just, you know, can I have 5 more minutes and roll over back to sleep type senses.
What's the lecture? They say, what's the lecture? And then,
favorite statement, it's like, I'm not going to be in class. Am I going to miss anything? Well, of course you are.
Yeah, exactly. So he actually went on. This story goes on, and if anybody wants to look this story up, the professor, that it's a very real experiment that surprised him. He expected that aspects of this were not going to work out as well as they did. He expected something, but his name is Sugata Mitra. He's a professor in India that conducted this experiment. The story was on NPR about a week or two ago. It's a great interview. It's just one of those amazing stories of human potential that can be tapped into with the right circumstance. That's another thing that I think can be a hindrance to learning. We're still on learning potential, I guess. Let's keep talking about that. And then later in the show, we'll talk a little bit about some miracles and things like that. So right now we're still on sort of the potential side. What about aspects of what can interfere with learning? One could even make the example. Now, this is. I'm not trying to get political here, Brett, but we talked about money a little bit last night, you and I. And some people would say money advances science, like the diehard capitalist. And I'm not claiming a political position here, folks. I'm just throwing arguments out there. Like the diehard capitalist would say, well, money allows, you know, to do this and for it to flow. But what about for the scientists that can't afford to fund, I know people like this, they can't afford to keep their inventions going, so they got to fold up shop. They got to close up shop. In a way, can the having to survive in a money system, can that interfere with development?
Oh, definitely, and it does. But I mean, even going before the scientist, I mean, if you can't go to school, I mean... it's almost like there's no point nowadays, to some extent, because you've got to get the little piece of paper nowadays.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, Cal Living says, "Does the mind have unseen universal powers that we have yet to understand and harness?" And I say, absolutely, of course. I believe when they say we only use a percentage, I don't know what that accurate percentage is. You know, some people say 3, some people say 10, 9. 11.
We use 100% of our brain. It's just not at the same time, and it's nowhere in the lower percentage. That's been all debunked.
But the difference between brain and mind.
Right, the difference between brain and mind is completely different, because the brain is physical and various chemical things. Now, it affects the mind, but the mind itself is incorporeal. We can't touch the mind.
That's what I'm saying. Mind and brain are two different things. Now, they're related, and they have a relationship. Brain is the physical tool from which the mind works, just like I think the body and the brain is the physical tool from which the soul lives. and some people might debate me, but I believe we have a soul. Which reminds me of our, the other night I had my electrical testers out, and I still have it here. I'll do it briefly, just very quickly, the continuity one. If you take the left lead of a continuity tester and then a right, I'm an electrician, by the way, in case everybody wants to know. And if you touch them, you get continuity. That's something you're supposed to get when you touch two splices of, or two pieces of metal together. So I'll touch it with one fingertip on my right hand and my fingertip on my left hand. And there you hear the tester goes off. Now, if I did the same test on a digital multimeter in the millivolt setting, it would say that a human being gives off a certain percentage of millivolts, which is what we do. It's the energy that we produce that flows through us. And different places in the environment will affect the tests as well. I'm not going to drift too far in this direction right now, but just for to let the new listeners know that weren't there Sunday when we discussed this, like a room can affect it, like how well the room is grounded. Electricity is everywhere. It's just connected to everything. The room, you can touch one end, one of these leads, if a lead being, it's basically a wire that's insulated with a exposed tip. You can touch one to your fingertip, like I just did before, and instead of the other one to the other fingertip, you can put it to a grounded electrical system, and it'll show that you have a voltage, but it's lower. So it's also showing grounding, and you hear that in spiritual practices, grounding. Well, you are touching something that's physically going into the earth. So it works for electricity in a circuit, and it works for the human as well, is what I'm saying. They even sell mats, like grounding mats, and there are certain stones and crystals that they say work good for humans to ground, especially with certain positions and held in certain ways. I'm not trying to drift too far off in that direction, but my point being, since we were talking about mind potential and in the chat room person brought it up, I think you could make an argument. My argument would be that you could almost say that an affordable, you know, $15 electrical tester could prove the existence of the human soul. Now, some people would say that's a leap. I understand that. But it's a good conversation, because saying that it's not a leap, as Brett and I talked about the other night, is a leap of faith. It's as well, it's an atheist leap of faith to say it's not. So it's just a matter of, can science and spirituality work together like the great, you know, alchemists of old that didn't separate the two? They were a part of it.
Let's be quick to say, not all atheists are anti-spirit.
No, that's not. I'm using that word just sort of quickly when I say atheist. Maybe there are some people that are very almost vehemently or violently opposed to anything that's spirit at all. And I say, well, it can be done scientifically and reasonably, because I love science as well as I love the idea of discovery, spirituality, and I don't think they're necessarily, or they don't always have to be necessarily separate. But I understand that certain scientific principles are much easier to prove in a laboratory without saying, well, what about, you know, the guy's chi might not have been right that day. I understand those things. You know what I mean? But there are ways. Remember that the electrical testers I mentioned are meant to protect lives and save lives. They're also meant to save very expensive equipment. So it's not, you know, a magic trick when I'm talking about this. In the illusionary sense, it can also prove the electricity that flows through the human body. It's just very real. It picks up every time. It never fails. And Hummingbird says it's not that we have a soul, like something is our pocket. Well, that's actually probably a pretty good point, too. We are a spirit soul. Our spirit is our eye, seeing through our eyes. Yeah, I actually agree. It's just the connectiveness, the oneness thing. Of course, Hummingbird, when I started the show, I started off with a Taoist saying, which of course is a lot about, Taoism is a lot about oneness and one. It was Tai Gong Diao, actually, was the Taoist scholar I quoted. And it was about how the yin and yang are expression of the one. So there are many facets of the one thing. And
We have reached the half point of our show. Do we want to do a small break and then move into...
We'll do a brief break, like just a little song break. I'll take a breath and come right back. And this will be some friends of ours, Ashley Cash and Jim Cash of Woven Green. And this is a song called Before Moonlit Night.
Before moonlit nights, an infant cries in the great void of silence. Before we knew time, a miracle spawned the dawn of life. Hear all the stories of how we came to be, our legends, myths, and our hero themes that share the secrets of our cosmic seed. Spin round the starlight, O ancient sun. Spin round until a new day has come. O mother and father, where do we come from? Day and night, great divide, yes, you and I, a world of boundary lies. Like the stories we open, we are left with sides to choose, and though the stories converge, we're still fighting a war that says this choice.
The fader is not working this evening, I don't think, but that band is good friends of mine, in case those because those listening, like Calvin, I think, has not joined us before. Woven Green is the name of the band, and they're friends of ours. They're local. They've been on the show before, and I've opened up, played and jammed out with them before, and we've had them here actually twice on the show. They're a great local band. Check them out. To Google Woven Green, it'll come up.
Every song I hear of those, I like it more.
Oh, they're great. They're great. And in the room, she's one of those people that sounds really good in the room acoustically. You know, when I hear them like rehearsing in the church and things like that, it's a Unitarian church. They were resident musicians there for a little while, and they just sound, you know, really good. I mean, whether acoustically or with their whole band. They got a drummer, they got a good kind of string and fiddle player when you see them live, with the whole band sometimes. But we were talking about different aspects of human potential, the existence of the soul, the potential of the mind. You mentioned a story in India with Professor Aguramitra, as well as some other things, talking about how you can physically, electrically, you know, test to see that you're there using electrical tester that I use every day because I'm an electrician, and that's what I do for my day job. I'm actually kind of glad to be back doing electrical work again. I love all the metaphors in electrical work with magic, because it's all, you know, you have a complete circuitry system that must be flowing properly. The energy must be flowing through a property. You have a send and a return, a neutral and a hot. You also have a proper grounding system. And there's a lot of metaphors to sort of magical or whatever you want to call it, metaphysical work and electrical terminology. So it's kind of fun when you dig into that. Now, one aspect of that, we were in the chat room, Hummingbird said something, and I mentioned something subatomic level about how we're united on a subatomic level. And that's very interesting to me, because I like to combine science and spirituality. And another one is how electrons on the atomic level exist in relationship to each other. And I think you've heard me mention this before, Brett, how that spinning electron moves and exists because there's other spinning electrons existing. Meaning by themselves, sort of like by themselves they're nothing, but together they can exist. It's a funny thing. People would then come back to the chicken and egg argument. Okay, when did one happen, I guess?
Well, the answer is, of course, the egg, because, well, the chicken was tastier.
But they all keep moving, just like every solid thing, like this table. It's actually always moving. And the electrons are always, you know, going around, spinning around. It's all an illusion of solidness, but it's one that we live in. So, you know, we live in this illusion, so we might as well find a way to deal with it, you know, in the best, most pleasant, I guess, way as possible. But they live within relationship of each other, and I always found that interesting about studying things at a subatomic level, because that's what physicists will tell you. But the electron, by the way, for those that don't know, you have the proton, the neutron, and the electron. And it's funny how you have the three basic elements of life. That number three comes up again, you know. The Trinity in Christianity, the Maiden Mother and Crone in pagan practice, goddess practices. There's always that powerful, including in science, on the neutron, the electron. But again, they live in relationship with each other. They're not necessarily separate. They're unified by an energy field. Now, some people would say that's somewhat controversial as to how unified it is and everything else. We're not going to go that far into that today. But let's move on now. Really talk about potential with learning. Mind is, in this case, you know, with children where the mind can be very free to learn. Languages is one of those great examples of that. Then we want some electrical connectivity. Possibly interpreting it to spirits. Now let's go on to some interesting miracles that have happened in the physical plane. And one is the incident, this is sort of, I'm just saying this one generically, when somebody can develop, and I've heard people try to debunk this, by the way, but let's talk about this for a minute, where people can, in a crisis situation, develop superhuman strength. Have you heard the debate on this, Brett?
Yes, people lifting cars, jumping to like the top of trains to get out, that kind of stuff. Just in events of stress, be it an adrenaline alone could not account for these things.
Now, here is an interesting way to look at this. There was one study I saw where the person said, well, okay, the heart rate increases. Of course, adrenaline, the other factor. Blood goes to only the needed areas. Like you kick into survival mode, and blood, maybe, for example, digestion isn't primary at that moment for survival. So blood kind of goes away from there, focuses onto the areas that are needed the most. Then, of course, also as well, another factor is natural, what you might call our natural opiates or our natural painkillers might kick in, affecting your ability to do these things as well. Because sometimes picking things like that up in normal circumstances would just plain hurt. Now, some people have done this and have claimed to be extremely sore, like it just tore their muscles out of place doing it, but they had the strength to do it in the first place during the time of crisis. I've sort of heard different takes on that, including moving large boulders out of the way, like hikers whose friend was trapped under something, superhuman feats under survival conditions. I mean, I think it's very possible. I'm not denying it at all. I don't know what side of the argument you were on, Brett, on that.
Oh, I'm very much, you know, I believe that all these things are parts of it. I think there is the extra element that, yes, what caused it to do all those things as well.
Okay, so you were almost, at first I thought you were debunking for a second, but you were saying there may actually be a spiritual element to this as well.
Yeah, it might be an additional element. But that doesn't mean all these things don't occur. You know, I mean,
right,
scientifically that's happening, but is there aid? Another thing I look at East and West. One of the criteria for a saint, for example, in the church is they have to do miracles after, in their life and after they die, and you know, or after they die. I don't think every single one of those thousands and thousands of stories did not happen. You know.
Right.
And there's of course the you know, the Eastern alchemist and the Taoist, they can perform things, great feats that, you know, we can't copy today.
I would like to, and I'll get right to that, and we'll get back to that, Brett, because it's a very good point. But our chat room person who's participating a lot, and I really like that a lot. We love participation. CA Living, California Living, I think is what it's standing for. It says, do humans really think of inventions, or do all ideas that are ripe for the times come to us via our minds from universe as we think our thoughts, therefore taking credit? Like, are these channeling through us, or are they our inventions? I would actually say, I'll attempt to answer that question first. I would say, yes, we do invent them. Because as a part of the great whole, I also think let me explain this very briefly. If we come from the great source, whatever you want to call it, God, the universe, Goddess, that is a creator. we're a spark of that, we're a piece of that, so we ourselves are creators as well. So I think it's a little bit of both. I think it flows through us, and then we have our own little part to play, and we come up, you know, it's our little spark, our little minds that come up and help these things come to reality. It's part of our reason for being here, is to learn to become brighter, to become a better aspect of the whole, if you know what I mean, or facet of the diamond. There's so many different ways of saying it, you know, that people like to express it. All the different lotuses in a pond, or, you know, there's a lot of ways. Kevin used the modern one. Kevin Baird used the modern one of saying, when you look at deity, the little light bulb, but the actual, you know, the whole thing is the power plant, but everybody, you know, they identify with the little lamp in there. But, and then Cal Living says, then what keeps our ideas in line with the world, time we live in?
Well, a lot of people come up with things that are way before their time.
Yeah, some people do come up with things that are before the time, but as far as them saying if they are linear, well, remember, we don't deny that we are still part physical and living here. You know, like we were talking before about various people that think that it's just, we're just animals and then we die and then it's all over. Well, the physical animal part of ourselves is extremely real, and we're raised in this time, so we're going to think of dimensions for this time. That's how I would say that. But yeah, but as Brett said, there are people that think well beyond that time as well. And like you're saying, linear, then you could be opening up a whole other conversation about different linear or non-linear fates and destinies and all this sort of, and timelines. But I just think, because we're still going to be a product of the time we grow up in, and then we might be bright enough to be far advanced beyond that. Oh yeah, absolutely, and feel free to ask. Especially on a night like tonight, where it's just sort of open discussion, we're discussing human potential and even miracles, our potential to learn even. I see Crystal Muse there in the chat room. And as well, our first story, we were talking about Professor Sugata Mitra, who placed a computer in a very impoverished, or what by Western standards, I guess people would say impoverished, no access to schools and all this kind of thing, quote-unquote slum in India. And the children went right up to it, and in a few months they learned how to use it. They had no instruction. They even learned that it was hooked up, it was linked to a system. And I thought that was fascinating. They eventually sent the guy a message, and he put it there, not in their native language. It was in English. And I'm just recapping for folks just joining us. So he placed this computer into this little village in India. The kids had no access to this. It wasn't in their native language. And together they gathered around this thing and learned about it. And when he met up with them, he goes, how on earth did you know how to work all of this? And one of the children said in an irritated voice, I like that part of the story, said, well, at first we had to teach ourselves English. Then we learned it. So it's just a great, if you're enough of a sponge and if you're in that right mindset, it's amazing what the human being can absorb. And of course, then we went on to electrons and electricity and the energy that flows through us. And Miss Marcy is here. She didn't hear me do my electrical test. I'll do it one more time. I can almost hear Brett sighing in the background. But this is a electrical tester, and I was saying, here's one lead that you hook up to the right hand, hook the other one up to the left hand, and you can definitely hear that there's a continuity there. There's a millivolt one I could do too, but it's not very good for radio. That'll produce about, depending on the situation, the room, people around you, everything else, anywhere between 30 millivolts, 15, maybe 100, but it always produces something. That humans conduct electricity. And then we discussed some other things about potential of the mind, and Cal Living, of course, asked some interesting questions about inventions and things like that. Not good for my age either. You're welcome. I enjoyed doing it anyway. But again, for those of you joining us, Janice's mother passed on. That's why she's not here. She's taking care of family business. Be a couple weeks before Janice comes back. So, you know, keep your thoughts and prayers with her and her family. Let's move on. Now we talked about those other things and inventions and partially flowing through, well, partially coming through you. See, I believe that separation is an illusion. I think we are all connected, and I think the separation is a huge part of the illusion. I think it's a huge problem. I think it's a huge problem on almost every issue on the planet, is the illusion of separateness. I started the show out with a very brief Taoist saying, and it's one of the aspects of Taoism I enjoy is the oneness aspect. There are other aspects. I would probably be the worst Taoist in the world if I claimed to be one. I used to. But a little too much desire, perhaps. But now let's go on to some interesting stories that seem to defy, I guess, physical realm sometimes. There was a story, I don't know if you ever remember hearing this one, Brett. But this one was in New York, Upper East Side. Alcides Moreno, a window washer, fell 47 stories and lived. He was treated. He was given about 24 pints of blood at about 9
Didn't
or 10.
Didn't it happen like twice? Didn't he fall again and survive?
I don't remember if he fell again.
Well, I know it happened like
with him and
not,
his brother.
Not as high the second time, but
some of their practices aren't the best for some of these contractors. So it wouldn't surprise me, to be honest. But 47 stories is an awful long way to fall and survive. I mean, I saw a guy fall. I was working in a Walmart doing electrical work, and I saw a guy fall through a roof. He landed on this, I mean, hard, if you've ever seen steam fitter pipe, if you know what that is, in the audience, it's very thick, heavy metal, like, you know, iron, heavy steel pipe. A heavy, like, brownish-red pipe you see in big commercial buildings.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm sorry, I was trying to respond to the chat room a bit, but I'm beyond that for a moment. But anyway, he ended up falling onto that, and he was just all busted up. It was kind of a gruesome scene. And, I mean, I'm about 80% sure he died. We never got a report. I think maybe it was an illegal worker. So when the authorities showed up, the place just scattered. I mean, so I don't know what this contractor was doing or what his practices were, but it took him a while. They finally took the guy away, but he was bloating. He was getting larger, you know, as he was laying there. And that was about 20 feet. It was my whole point of this. That was a 25-foot fall, which is a heck of a fall. I mean, you do not want to fall 25 feet. If you've ever been up on a 12-foot ladder, you don't want to fall off of an 8-foot ladder, 6-foot ladder. And this guy survived a 47-story Alcides Moreno survived a 47-story fall hitting the concrete. It's a pretty amazing story. Now, go to another physical story that's kind of interesting. There was a woman who fell 3,000 feet with a faulty parachute. Her name was Louise Butler. It twisted around her, and she ended up surviving. As she was falling, she said, "Please, please, 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 God save me. I have a son, I have a son, I have a son." And she was injured. She had a, you know, busted pelvis, hip, leg bones, things like that. Very painful experience, but she survived. That's 3,000 feet. Partial parachute kind of thing going on.
So she was slowed down a little bit, even.
Yeah, it wasn't a free fall.
Right.
It was a faulty parachute where she was busted up. But a lot of the people involved with the story thought for sure that someone would normally not survive something like this. And there's, like I said, there's many other, we discussed earlier as well, the superhuman strength thing, you know, the mother lifting the car off the child or the daughter off the father. There's been a lots of stories off of like that, someone lifting boulders if they're out hiking. And again, you know, heart rate increase, adrenaline, blood going to the needed areas and not just going to the, sort of, I guess, secondary areas. One example given was digestion, because you don't need to do that right now. The natural human opiates, if you will, the natural human painkillers kick in. And all these factors combine with, like Brett saying, maybe another, you know, larger spiritual factor kicking in to be able to do these amazing human feats, you know, to tap into that sort of strength and to do something that people on every day, they will go and try it again. I've seen people do things like that too, like they'll go try it again, they're like, no way. They're just not in that situation at that point.
I wouldn't go again. And I would not go through the same situation twice. I would not probably put myself in that situation again.
But one interesting aspect of how things can happen physically, as I often wonder about some of the trainings that go on, like when people harden certain things. But these are not things about that are prepared. These are about things that happen as they happen, you know. So this is about the spontaneity, the moment. I remember there was one where they tried to say, well, the guy was a weightlifter. This is kind of the point I was getting to. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, lifting up a giant boulder or a car is a little different than, you know, you're able to curl, you know, 100 pounds that day or whatever. That's a little bit different. You're talking about a couple tons. A small car is 1 ton. A large truck, a few. I mean, you're talking thousands and thousands of pounds. There was one, here's an interesting case. I actually got this just goofing around online one day. The guy's name was Michael Crow, and this is all medically documented, which was what I liked about this case. And they had told him he needed an emergency heart transplant. I don't know if you had heard this story, Brett. But anyway, and he literally went from heart failure, stopped actually a couple of times, needing a transplant. And then before the transplant was done, they did a couple echocardiograms, and as I said before, his heart had stopped a couple of times, but then they saw that the heart had healed itself. So my first conclusion was, when I was hearing the story, was, okay, was this a misdiagnosis? That was my going on in my mind when I first heard this story. But they're saying that it wasn't, so who knows? I mean, but it's just one of those things. I'm just putting these things out there as questions, folks. I'm not saying I have all the answers or come to my show for miracles kind of thing. But it is a fascinating story that was sort of medically, you know, documented along the way. And they're like,
we will not punch people in the face and heal them.
I'm not asking you to, well, if you want to roll around with snakes, go ahead. But
well, especially as people know my feelings of those kind of TV preachers, of course. I think there's a lot of crock on TV, and there's probably legitimate healers somewhere. I just don't think
right.
There is.
In the case I was talking about was not any kind of Marcy says snakes are fun.
Of course Marcy would say that.
But I don't. I lost their chat conversation. I think she might have been in debate somewhere. But we're kind of coming down to it. We had a few interesting points here. We were talking about one of my favorite recent stories, which was the story of the Professor Sagata Mitra, who placed the computers in the impoverished neighborhoods where the kids had no access to anything and no schools. And they learned how to use them themselves. by first teaching them English themselves and to each other. No one taught them. They learned the English, and they learned how to use a computer. Great story on NPR, on TAD Radio, just to, again, Sagata Mitra is the professor, if you want to look that story up. If you Google up Sagata Mitra and then NPR, I'm sure it'll come up. But I love those kind of stories that are about positive human abilities when focused and the amazing potential of human beings. And we talked about our electrical potential. A couple of miracles. Again, Janice will be joining us again in a couple weeks. Our guest, Orion Foxwood, was rescheduled because it's one of Janice's friends and she wanted to interview him, so we rescheduled him. Excuse me.
Gives me time to get his book anyway, or at least one of them.
He has a few books, Tree of Enchantment, which I actually have right in front of me here. Fairy tradition guy. You know, his fairy tradition is a 7-year program. Pretty impressive.
Sounds about right.
In Maryland. He's been doing it a pretty good while. And he's also a conjure guy. He does Southern Conjure.
That's the book I'm probably going to be grabbing. Was it Candle in the Crossroads?
I think that's what it is. I have the Tree of Enchantment one here. The agent sent it to Janice, and then she sent it to me. So it's actually pretty good. It's actually, there's a few emotional appeals in here that are a little bit surprising for paganism, but I kind of liked it. A little bit fiery. not
the fairy tradition's a little bit more emotional than, say, Wicca.
And not a bad book. It's in fact, there's a compliment by a couple of interesting people here. Of course, Oberon Zell, who we love and was on the show. Margot Adler complimented the book, said Orion is smart, savvy, fun, down to earth, with great paganism. Chris Penzack as well, an enchanting gateway into an authentic spiritual tradition guided by spirits with roots deep in the earth and true understanding of the stars. So he's definitely got some interesting friends. David Spangler, Mary Kay Greer, a lot of knowledgeable pagans complimenting this Tree of Enchantment book. So I encourage you to look up that Tree of Enchantment, Ancient Wisdom and Magic Practices of the Fairy Fae Tradition. Anyway, everybody, thanks for tuning in to Main Street Universe tonight. It was sort of an impromptu show. We picked a topic and started rapping about it as Janice, our original topic had to change because Janice's mother had passed on. But I really appreciate everybody for showing up. I see Magical Hummingbird. I feel like a romp room. I see Marcy. I see Brett. I see Cal Living. And that guy or girl has left, I think. But thank you all for joining us. And keep your questions coming. This will be Woven Green again. We'll go ahead and finish with this one. One that I really like. Say goodnight, Brett, before I do this.
Blessings to everyone. See you next week.
All right. See you next week. Sixth Son by Woven Green. Hoo-ah, hoo-ah.